Welcome to the Sidearm Delivery Podcast, part of the D1 Baseball Podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling. We're back for another episode, and we're heading to Texas this week to talk about the Big 12 and one of the hottest teams in the nation. Last episode, we talked to Stanford head coach David Esker about the Cardinal and broke down the Pac-12 race with D1 Baseball national analyst Mike Rooney. This week, we're virtually heading to the DFW to chat with TCU head coach Kirk Sarlous. The Horned Frogs have had some up and downs in Sarlous' first year as head coach. They started 7-1 before losing a series at Kentucky, but they bounced back with a strong start to Big 12 play, won a pair of series during an 11-game stretch where they won 10 games. But then a 10-game stretch for TCU, they went 3-7 and looked like they were in trouble with a pair of conference series against top five teams coming up next. But instead of faltering, that's when the Horned Frogs came alive. Sarlous and associate head coach Bill Mozzielo worked their magic. TCU swept number 4 Texas Tech and then went to number 3 Oklahoma State and took the series, which pushed the Horned Frogs into first place in the Big 12 standings with a 12-6 record. They're now 27-13 overall in the season and have pushed themselves into the hosting conversation for regionals with an RPI of number 27. The Horned Frogs also got a big boost on Sunday with the return of ace left-hander Austin Krobe, who pitched 2 hitless innings of relief after missing 6 weeks. In his absence, Riley Cornelio has stepped up into the Friday role and excelled. We'll discuss both of those guys with Sarlous, as well as the left side of his infield, where shortstop Tommy Sacco is playing with a ton of confidence and getting a ton of results this year, while third baseman Braden Taylor is one of the top sophomores in the nation. We'll also talk to Sarlous about the differences in being the head coach versus an assistant, the impact retaining Mozzielo has had, seeing Jim Schlossnagel in different colors on the recruiting trail, and get some insights on a really cool program TCU pitcher Luke Savage founded to help others. Later, D1 Baseball national writer Kendall Rogers joins the show to talk about the Big 12, getting his take on Texas Christian as well as the 3 other contenders chasing the Horned Frogs atop the conference standings. We'll also discuss the postseason outlook for the Big 12 and look at the spate of arm injuries to top pitchers, not only in the Big 12, but across the country. In case you're new to the show, the Sidearm Delivery Podcast is a little bit different than the other D1 Baseball podcast offerings. They come at you over the top with top 25 rankings, top prospects, and give you an overview of the entire nation, while like any good sidewinder, we're coming at you from the low slot using a running two-seamer. We're diving in on the batter's hands and diving a little deeper into a specific region or conference each episode, talking with players and coaches, as well as bringing on our D1 Baseball analysts to drop some knowledge. Well, now welcome in our guest, TCU first-year head coach Kirk Sarlous, who has the Horned Frogs atop the Big 12 standings after back-to-back series wins over top 25 opponents. Top 5 opponents back-to-back. Kirk, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Shotgun.
Well, we've got to begin with those last 2 weeks, a sweep of number 4 Texas Tech and then a series win at number 3 Oklahoma State. And you even lost the opener at OK State, but bounced back with a pair of close wins to lock up that series victory. What stood out to you about the way your team's playing the last couple of weeks as you climbed into first place in the Big 12 standings?
Yeah, I think it was on the heels of playing like 3. I think we only won 3 games out of 10 the previous like 2 weeks. So it was like not the greatest stretch of baseball prior to. And we just kind of rededicated ourselves to playing with a little bit of a chip on our shoulders, the underdog mentality. And, you know, the guys have done a great job in terms of showing up every single day. And, you know, you said we lost the first game. We didn't lose the first game at Oklahoma State. We got boat raced. We lost 13-3. So it says a lot about our guys in terms of coming back and putting that in the rear view mirror and winning a series on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. You mentioned it. You were after that 10 game stretch where you were 3-7, you had back-to-back conference series losses to get your team to play with a chip on their shoulder. How do you go about doing that as a head coach?
Well, I mean, you talk about it. I think it just, you know, TCU's had a ton of success, you know, over the last, you know, 10 years. And so the big thing is, now you have a target on your back, and a lot of times, you know, people don't understand why it's on your back, because a lot of these guys weren't part of the, you know, the 4-year stretch of going to Omaha every single year. And so a lot of times the best teams are the teams that play like they're the underdog, even though they might not be. And so that was our ultimate goal, is to make sure that you have an idea with our program of, you know, we need to get back to Omaha. And how do you do that? Well, you have to play great baseball, but you have to play like you've never been there. And so that's the ultimate thing. And then ultimately it comes down to, like everybody knows, starting pitching. And so when we have good starting pitching and allow our offense to function without having to play catch up, you know, I think we have a way better chance at winning baseball games. And we just had a tough stretch in those 10 games where we didn't get awesome starting pitching. We didn't swing it well. And you do those two things poorly and you're probably going to lose 7 games. So, and we've done better in that area, those areas, the last, you know, 6 or 7.
Now, this is your first rough patch as a head coach, but you've been through it as a pitching coach as well. You've obviously been around the game for a long, long time. When you get in one of those rough patches, how do you go about breaking loose? And what's your kind of philosophy now as a head coach? Do you try something different with the teams and mix it up? Do you refocus on, you know, kind of your core values? Or does it kind of depend on the team that you have each year?
Yeah, I mean, for me, the big thing is to not panic. I mean, in Major League Baseball, you have 162 games. So, you know, if you have a tough 10 games, it's no big deal. But in college baseball, when you have 56, you know, 10 games, a rough 10 games is a big deal. But ultimately, you know, why do you have those rough 10 games? Let's get back to the reasons why and then work on those things. And the big thing is for your team to not see you or your coaching staff panic and ultimately get back to the fundamentals of, okay, what do we need to do to have success? And we need to pitch well, we need to play good offense, and we need to play good defense. Pretty simple. Let's get to that in practice, and then let's do it in the games. Because every single team, maybe with the exception of Tennessee, is going to go through a rough spot, right? So how do you handle those? You just keep working, you know, and you don't panic. You just go to work. And ultimately, the more team meetings you have, the worse you are, I think. You know, like if you have a bunch of team meetings, it means you stink. So ultimately, you know, we had a couple team meetings and talked over some stuff, but man, it's just go back to work. Let's figure it out and let's get better at what we need to do.
A lot of times the best teams will have that leadership come from within as well. So you don't have to have all those team meetings. You know, you'll have one players only meeting that you're not even involved in that they kind of will correct things for you as well. Well, there's the big news from the weekend was not only that you got the series win, but you get opening day starter Austin Krob back on the mound for the first time in more than a month, throws 2 hitless innings for you in Sunday's win. What's the plans for him the rest of the season? How good was it to see him back out there? Do you hope to work him back in the rotation? What's kind of the ideal situation there for him?
Well, it's great to see him back out there. You know, preseason all-conference selection, I think a preseason All-American. For him to be gone for 5 weeks of the season, and not only do we miss him, but then it makes other guys have to slide into different roles, and it makes your pitching staff, you know, going into the season, you got it slotted one way, and then you lose your Friday night guy, and everybody kind of has to move up a role. So it was great to have him back. He was chomping at the bit, and, you know, we were planning on him going one inning, and he had a great first inning, I think in the 7th inning, and he came running off the field, and I just looked at him, and he looked at me, and he's like, I'm going back out. I'm like, okay. You know, so he ran back out there for the 2nd inning. You know, we don't win that game if we don't have him, because we were able to use, you know, Augie Milbauer in the 4th inning, a left-handed pitcher for us in a bases-loaded situation with nobody out. He got a double play and then a ground ball, only giving up one run. We're not able to use him if we don't have Austin Krob, another lefty, because, you know, Oklahoma State has 3 really good left-handed hitters at the top of their order. And so to be able to have Austin come in and do, you know, pretty much 2 clean innings was huge. And then moving forward, you know, we're going to take it day by day. You know, ultimately, we'd love to build him back up to be a starting pitcher, but it's great to have that left-handed weapon down there, and, you know, at the end of games as well. So, you know, we're going to kind of listen to him and listen to our team doctors and see how he's feeling. We're not going to push him in any way. We're just going to let him build his arm back up. And if that means by the end of the year that he's starting, great. If not, we'll use him out of the bullpen.
Well, he is a dynamic weapon for you to use. Without him, you had Riley Cornelio kind of step up into that Friday night role, and he excelled before getting roughed up a little bit this weekend. What stood out about him, you know, moving up for you and taking over that Friday role, you know, a role that wasn't envisioned for him necessarily this year when you did have Austin at the front end?
Yeah, I think, you know, Riley had a tremendous summer. So he left last year. We were still playing and we sent him out to go to summer ball. You know, he wasn't in our, you know, pitching plans last year. He just, you know, didn't get off to a great start. And then we decided, hey, you need to go pitch and pitch a bunch, because, you know, he missed out on, you know, obviously the COVID year, and his development in terms of getting a ton of innings over the last 2 years, he didn't really get. So we sent him out to summer ball. He threw about 45 innings up in the Northwoods League, had a great summer, came back a totally different guy. And, you know, if it wasn't for Austin and his track record, Riley probably would have been the Friday night guy from game one, just because of the awesome spring or the awesome fall. And then the spring or the January leading up to our season, he had a great lead up to that. And he's had a great year. He's super competitive. And, you know, we, like you said, he ran into a tough one the first time that he didn't have his good stuff. And when you don't have your great stuff and it's blown out 40 miles an hour to left field, you know, at Obreight Stadium in Stillwater, that's a recipe for a tough night. But, you know, he's been our rock in terms of our pitching staff on Friday nights. He's gone toe to toe with everybody. So he's been just, I mean, you can't say enough about what he's meant to our team this year.
What did it tell you about this team, the way they were able to bounce back from that? You know, you go into a, you know, a hostile environment and get blown out on the Friday to be able to come back and find a way to win two close ball games the rest of the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we kind of got on the bus, and my message to them was sometimes a 13-3 loss is easier to swallow than a tough, heartbreaking 4-3 loss that you lose in the bottom of the ninth. And I said, hey, we got our butts kicked. No doubt about it. What are we going to do about it? Well, we're going to have a good dinner. When you get off the bus, forget about it. We still have an opportunity to do what we wanted to do coming up here, and that's to win a series. And so they showed up the next day, ready to play. You know, it was really awesome to watch them play the next two games in terms of getting blown out and then basically winning a series. And it wasn't easy. You know, that's a really good ball club over there with really good coaching staff. You know, it was awesome to see them rebound in a way where, you know, they showed some grit and some toughness and you know, they came away with what we went up there to go do, and that was to win a series.
You built on the Texas Tech series win, the sweep there. You're trying to now build on the Oklahoma State series win. You don't have a Big 12 conference series this weekend, but you've got an interesting week. You got a tough midweek against Dallas Baptist, and then an intriguing non-conference series at Florida State this weekend. How do you approach a non-conference series like this in the middle of your conference schedule? Do you try to rest some guys up, maybe tamp down your pitch counts? Do you give some young guys an opportunity? Or you use that as a refresher, you know, late in the season? Or do you try to play through just like it's another conference weekend because you've been playing so well and you don't really want to mess with anything?
No, we're going to take this as kind of like we got, you know, we're in regional play and we got sent to Tallahassee. You know, we're going to play with the mentality that this is a weekend where it's a regional, and we got to go on the road and we got to beat a really, really good ball club, and especially at their home ballpark. So, you know, we're not going to rest anybody. We're going to play baseball just like it was a conference series, just like it was a regional. It's going to be an awesome environment. I'm super excited for our guys to go out there. I've never been to Tallahassee, but I've heard, you know, great stories about it. And I've seen a bunch of baseball obviously on TV, but it's going to be fun. You know, it's sometimes at the beginning of the year, I think preseason, it sounded pretty fun to, hey, let's go play Florida State in late April. And now that we're here after playing Texas Tech, Oklahoma State with two DBUs in the midweek, it's like, who the heck scheduled Florida State at the end of April? You know, so it's going to be fun. But we're not going to rest anybody. We're going to go in there and, you know, obviously try to win a series.
I'll give you a chance to come back to this if you'd like to, but you said you've never been to Florida State. What's one other place that you've never been to that you really like to take your team to in the future? And if you don't have something off the top of the head, we can come back to it. Because you go into this weekend, you said it's going to be like a regional type of setting. You know what helps you go when you go into a regional setting, when you go on the road, is having a dynamic left side of the infield that can really pick it, can really hit as well. And that's what you've got with Tommy Sacco at shortstop, Braden Taylor at third. And Tommy Sacco has been a guy that really struggled last year, still played great defense for you, but now to come on and become the hitter that he's become this season, what has he done to bounce back and become a dynamic weapon for the offense as well?
Well, I mean, I think Tommy, you know, he got off to a slow start last year and just never recovered. You know, he played good defense, but just never recovered offensively. And Coach Mo and Coach Talara Did a great job. He changed a couple things. You know, he's got a little bit of a leg kick now. He's got a little bit more rhythm with his hands pre-pitch, and he got off to a good start. And, you know, baseball is all about confidence and momentum, and he's carried that throughout the whole season, and he's impacting baseballs more in terms of hitting, you know, getting more doubles and more home runs, and he's doing it from both sides. So, and still playing great defense. So we always knew he was a great hitter, and Coach Mo's thing was when he talked to him in the offseason was to challenge him to – he really empowered him, continue to tell him that he's a great hitter. You know, because I think a lot of times when you have a tough season, you start questioning yourself and doubting yourself. And Coach Mo just kept breathing, you know, life into him and letting him know that you are a great offensive player. You're not just a defensive shortstop. And, you know, I think Tommy finally kept hearing it, and then started producing. And then next thing you know, the snowball just started going. And it's been great to see. He's been a huge, obviously, asset to our lineup. You know, obviously, and then you got Braden Taylor at third base, you know, who's played great defense and was a freshman All-American last year and is doing, you know, just the same thing as he did last year, this year. So it's an awesome left side of the infield for sure.
Yeah, Braden, he has, I mean, that just a absolutely gorgeous stroke from the left side. He has such a patient approach to the plate, too. He's got 38 walks already this season, likely to be a high draft selection when his time comes. Only a sophomore right now. But what stands out to you about his game, you know, in the box and then also just, you know, when he's not in the box hitting?
You know, he's not the loudest person in the dugout or off the field. He's fairly quiet, but he is definitely super competitive. Sometimes it doesn't show if you just watch him. The game kind of comes easy to him. But inside, he's super competitive. And the best attribute about him is probably that he's ultra competitive, hates to lose. But from a skill standpoint, you know, like I said, plays great defense at third base, can probably play short for us, might do that next year. Can play, he was a Cape Cod League All-Star at second base in the summer. So he can play short, third, second, wherever you want him to play. And then just the zone discipline in terms of, like you said, he has 38 walks or whatever it is. He knows the strike zone. So he gets good swings off on pitches that he knows he can hit and lays off the pitches that are balls or knows that he can't do damage with. So you put all that together, that's the sign of a great player, is a competitive ball player that has a great skill set like he does. And then ultimately, you know, knowing what he can do and what he can't do.
Yeah, he's been fantastic to watch. I got a chance to, you know, anytime I see that you guys are on, I look and see where they're at in the lineup, because if Braden Taylor's coming up, I gotta flip over and make sure that I'm watching there. You know, it's been a different year for you. You know, after 9 seasons as the pitching coach at TCU, taking over as the head coach, what was it like for you taking over for Jim Schlossnagle this season after being his assistant for those 9 seasons?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference is probably about 20 feet from that office down the hall to this one. You know, it's a lot bigger, and with a bigger office, you got to make more decisions. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, instead of people walking by your office as the recruiting coordinator and pitching coach, now they walk into your office, and you got to be diligent in terms of having meetings and being organized in terms of scheduling those meetings and making sure the team's in the right place, doing the right things. And so just more phone calls in terms of, you know, whether it be our players or our strength coach or whatever it may be, in terms of making decisions on different things in the program. But ultimately, when you get down on the field, it's the same thing. And Coach Mo and myself, you know, I did the pitching, Coach Mo did the offense. And so really from a baseball sense, when you get down on the field, not much has changed. You know, we're still playing the same brand of baseball that we've been playing for the last 10 years. And it's been a lot of fun. I got probably a little bit more gray hair. In terms of, you know, being a head coach, but it's been a blast, and I've enjoyed every second.
With those extra responsibilities that you now have, with more people stopping by your office, with you having to do, you know, being the face of the program now, how important was the retention of keeping hitting coach Bill Mosiello around the program and, you know, having him there? So if you have to go do some responsibility that maybe you weren't anticipating, you can just, you know, hand things off to him, because obviously he's been around for so long as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's the head coach of the offense. he gets full reign to do whatever he wants, and he's done. He's been there. He's done that. I don't think I could do this job if I didn't have him with me, just because, you know, he was a manager in AA with the Angels and the Yankees, and he's been been to a lot of great places in terms of college baseball as well. And so for me, being able to have, you know, him by my side has made this job a lot easier than what it would have been if I didn't have him. So that was, you know, decision number one in terms of when I did get the job, was making sure that Coach Mo was taken care of and was going to be by my side, because we've been together for 9 years and hopefully for, you know, many more to come.
Did Schloss give you any new advice when you took over for him? And what was it like maybe seeing him on the recruiting trail wearing different colors during the offseason?
Yeah, no advice, but yeah, it was a little different. You know, we ran into each other, I think, one time out in Atlanta. Yeah, it's a little different seeing him in maroon as opposed to purple.
How do you try to make the program your own after the consistency you guys have had as far as the staff under Jim? And then also, you know, what you're trying to build yourself? Do you keep things the same? Do you try to and continue to roll with it? Or do you try to switch some things up? And, you know, were there some areas where you really wanted to put your own touches on it initially?
Yeah, I mean, we've made some tweaks and changes here and there. And like I said, it's baseball, you know, off the field in terms of, you know, what we're doing as a program is different than it was in previous years. And I think ultimately it just comes down to, you just got to be true to who you are. For me personally, I'm not going to try and be something that I'm not. I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to be who I am. And, you know, cause kids are super smart. They're going to see right through you if you're trying to be something that you're not. And so, you know, that's the way the program is going to be run. Is it's going to be authentic with all of our coaches, all of our support staff. And we're going to show up every single day, and we're going to love on our kids, and we're going to work hard. We're going to ask a lot of them, but we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. But ultimately, baseball is baseball, and we're going to still 60 feet, 6 inches and 90 feet to the bases. And we're not going to change much in terms of on the field stuff.
In the midst of those 9 seasons as pitching coach, I believe it was 8 as a recruiting coordinator, you had to run a 4 consecutive College World Series appearance, but it's been a couple of years now. So what do the Horned Frogs have to do to put together a run to Omaha?
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I mean, you know, Brian Howard was a guy that he came to TCU in 2014 and went to 4 College World Series in a row in his 4 years. And it's like, that's all he knew. And so now, you know, since 2017, we haven't been back. So, you know, obviously that's our goal. That's everybody's goal when the season starts. And, you know, we don't talk a ton about Omaha. You know, it's on the walls. In terms of our 5 appearances on our left field wall, it's some of the branding underneath downstairs in our locker room and clubhouse. There's some Omaha, but really as a group, it's about just playing and getting better every single day. And that's ultimately going to take care of itself, because, you know, when you're looking in a telescope and you're looking far down the road, you're not taking care of what's in front of you. So what we need to do is basically every single day work towards being the best version of ourselves and playing the best that we possibly can. And then ultimately that's going to take care of itself. Everybody knows when you start day one in February, game one, that your ultimate goal is to play in Omaha, Nebraska. And our guys know it as well. We talk about it a little bit, but it's not every single day. It's not, you know, the end all be all. The end all be all is how can we get better today? And so right now what's in front of us is DBU tomorrow. You know, and then once that's done, we're going to get ready for Florida State and Tallahassee. And once that's done, we're going to get back to our midweek game. So ultimately, yeah, that's what we want to do. But we know it's a process and it's not going to happen overnight. We just got to take care of what we need to take care of and win baseball games.
You're trying to take care of that. I got to talk to you, though, about Luke Savage, who's taking care of some other people. You know, he's got his Blessed Feet program that he created to give cleats to some of the Dominican Republican kids that he saw after a trip down there. Explain to me kind of what's going on there, how that's kind of built this season, and what's it like for you seeing a guy like that that's helping and giving back to some people in another area?
Yeah, he's a special kid. So in 2000, it must have been 2019, he went with his high school baseball team, Prestonwood Christian Academy out in Plano. They went out to the Dominican Republic and did a mission trip and they played some baseball out there, and he noticed that, man, a lot of these kids don't have cleats, or they don't have, or they have cleats and there's holes in them. And so that really kind of, you know, hit his heart. And so on, when he came back, you know, he just decided he's going to do something about it, you know, and kudos to him, a 19-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid, he comes back, and a lot of kids just say, you know, that was a great trip, but he actually wanted to do something about it. And so he started an organization, like you said, called Blessed Feet. And now that he has a bigger platform, you know, he's been able to, you know, have a ton of people donate, you know, athletic shoes and cleats. And so when we played the Rangers this fall, when we played their kind of their minor league all-star team, you know, we had a cleat drive. And then when we played Texas Tech, we had another cleat drive, and, you know, a ton of people have been able, very supportive in terms of, you know, donating shoes. And then when we played at UT Arlington a couple of weeks ago, they had their whole team and their program donated a bunch of athletic shoes. And so it's kind of grown and grown and grown as his platform has gotten bigger. And now it's become, I mean, shoot, probably, I mean, his third full-time job. He's an athlete, he's a student, and now he's doing this, but he loves it. And he loves taking care of other people, and he's got a huge heart, and he's a 4.0 student to go along with it, you know? So I can't say enough about Luke, and just in terms of, you know, his platform and what he's doing with it in terms of looking out for other people. It's been pretty awesome to see.
That's an awesome story to hear. Great success story for you to point back to in the future as well. So I got to ask, who's your favorite success story that you've coached? Could be on the field, could be off the field. You know, who's someone, whether it be trials and tribulations or just, you know, having, you know, the elite success, who's the person that you look at as one of your best success stories?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I think one that pops into my mind just because he got his first big league win yesterday was Nick Lodolo, a guy that, you know, I think, you know, he got drafted 41st overall and turned down a bunch of money to come to school, and people were calling him crazy, and, you know, and then he had to go, you know, and then he pitched for 3 years here, and then signed as the seventh pick and got to the big leagues, I think a year and a half or 2 years later. So it's one of those deals where I think his, the way he planned out his life has gone according to plan, and which is awesome. And, but I mean, we've coached so many great players. I think the greatest thing about TCU is, you know, it's a great school, but I mean, the kids that we get to coach are phenomenal young men, you know, and there's a ton of stories that I could tell you in terms of the guys that we coach that, you know, we've been to shoot probably 15 or 20 weddings in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's the fun part, is you get to see these guys play baseball. You get to watch them grow up. They move on, whether they're still playing baseball or not. And next thing you know, you're invited to their wedding and you get to see them probably in their, you know, their biggest day of their life. And that, those are the things that you remember. You know, it's awesome when you get to go to Omaha and have success on the field. But when you get to take part in somebody's, you know, see them get married, and that's the great stuff. So, you know, I don't know if I can really narrow it down to a couple people, but I mean, we just have special kids all the way around.
Well, we'll just make sure that no one makes those late June wedding plans, yeah, where you can't attend, because hopefully we'll see the Horned Frogs back in Omaha before too long. Kirk, thanks so much for taking the time. I do have to come back to it, though. What's the one place that you haven't been that you want to take the Horned Frogs in the future? And we know it has to be a regular season series, because you don't want to be on the road in a regional or a super regional. You want to be at home in Lupton for that. So if you're scheduling out a future series, what's the one place that you'd like to go that you've never been?
Well, I mean, when we were in the Big West, you know, we used to go play Hawaii. So that would be kind of fun to take them out to Hawaii. That'd be enjoyable. But other than that, really, I mean, there's so many places now that are invested in college baseball that have great atmospheres. You know, you look around the country now in terms of the attendance numbers, just phenomenal. And really, I would say really any place that is invested in college baseball, because I want to get these guys in front of other, you know, great fan bases. You know, we played at Texas this year, you know, and they have 7,000 people in the stands. We played, you know, just got done playing in Stillwater. They had 7,000 people. It's always fun to play in hostile environments with a bunch of people that are really rooting for the most part against you. And so anytime we can get our players in those situations, that's when it becomes super fun. Nobody wants to play in front of an empty stadium. So anybody that's invested will go and play. And I think it's a ton of fun for our guys to be able to get in those environments.
I always say there's no better feeling than silencing an away crowd that's, a hostile crowd that's going crazy. And if you just completely shut them up, there's no better feeling. It's great to feel the home crowd and everything and get it really excited, but silencing somewhere that's been raucous, there's nothing like it, in my opinion. But Kirk, thanks so much for taking the time for jumping on the Sidearm Delivery Podcast with me, and good luck the rest of the season. We'll see if the Horned Frogs can stay in first place in the Big 12 going forward.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
That was TCU head coach Kirk Sarlous, who has the Horned Frogs in a great position to potentially win the Big 12 regular season title in his first season at the helm. But TCU isn't the only one in the mix for the conference title right now. There are six teams within two games of first place, with Texas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, and the Horned Frogs all in the mix to host a regional as well. To break it all down, talk a little bit about how things are looking, we bring in the man that hates your favorite college baseball team, no matter who that team is, D1 baseball national writer Kendall Rogers. KR, thanks for taking some time in between all the hating that you do to join us.
Yeah, well, TCU fans, I say that I hate TCU the most, so I guess I'll just put TCU number one on the list.
Well, since we just talked to Kirk Sorlers, let's start with the Horned Frogs and, hating them the most. They looked, like they were in danger a couple weeks ago. It looked like they maybe not even making the postseason in his first year at the helm. And then they reel off perhaps the most impressive back-to-back weekends of anyone this season. What did you think about the Frogs getting a pair of top five series wins in 10 days?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for TCU is, I saw those guys against Texas a couple weeks ago, now it's 3 weeks ago. But, even when I saw them against Texas, like, they didn't look bad. I thought offensively, Braden Taylor was impressive. I thought Tommy Sacco, who has continued to just be a force for that offensive lineup, he was outstanding against Texas a weekend. I saw him, I want to say, he might have got out once or twice the entire weekend. It kind of gives you an idea of how good he's been. But he's continued to have a lot of success. And so I think when you combine that with the fact that, the pitching staff, you're starting to get some key pieces back. One of the storylines a couple of weeks ago was, no Austin Krobe against Texas. So it was kind of putting a little bit more pressure on guys like, Marcelo Perez and Brett Walker. All of a sudden, Krobe comes out of the bullpen against Oklahoma State, strikes out a couple, and throws two shutout innings. So all of a sudden, if you look at TCU from afar, you're looking at a team with a really solid Friday guy in Riley Cornelio. Marcelo Perez is still a solid arm. Brett Walker has been very solid at times this year. I know he didn't have a great outing against Oklahoma State over the weekend, but he's solid as well. Then you throw Krobe in there, that's a potential fourth really high quality starter. And when you start to look ahead to the postseason, which I know Lowe's doesn't want to do, this team gets really intriguing because you got four starting options, with the back end, Garrett Wright, I want to say over the weekend had at least one good outing out of the bullpen. So you've got a power arm there, River Ridings, Luke Savage. There's a lot of really, really interesting pieces with this TCU team.
Yeah, you talked about Krobe getting him back. What impact does it have if you get him back and can use him in, a full throttle variation by the end of the season, as they're working back right now? If you can get him back to full strength, what does that add to either this rotation or as a guy that comes out of the bullpen and can give you valuable innings?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, when you look at Krobe overall, I mean, the first thing obviously that people want to talk about is the fact he's a left-hander, but he's also a left-hander that can sit, 90, 93. I've seen him bump a 94 before. And he'll come at you with a really good changeup and a really good slider at times. And so anytime you can have a lefty with that kind of stuff, that's really, really intriguing. And so I just think the biggest thing with him is he's got the potential to be one of the better left-handed pitchers in college baseball. When you have a guy with that kind of potential, even if he hasn't quite proven it yet, that intrigues me.
They've had an interesting season. They start 7-1, they lose a series to Kentucky, kind of been up and down. They had a 3-7 stretch and now just a great 10-game stretch, or a 10-day stretch. So what do you make of this group and the fact that it's kind of been a little bit of a roller coaster ride? What does it take for them to get on that, that upward trajectory for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I just think the biggest thing for me is like, what lessons did you learn from like the Texas series, for instance, and the West Virginia series? And what did you learn from the last two weekends? Because obviously, baseball, as we all know, is a marathon, not a sprint. There's a lot of ebbs and flows. And There's going to be a point at some point the rest of the year where TCU might not play the best brand of baseball, and they've got to, you know how to handle that. They've got to learn from past experiences. So I think the biggest thing when I look at TCU is if you look at the last two weekends, they've really had some guys step up. I mean, we talked about Brett Walker a second ago, but I think he only went just a hair over three innings against Oklahoma State in the series finale, and they still find a way to win that game 7-6. And so, you know, this time of year in college baseball, it's been a long year already. You know, some guys are tired, and, you know, this is a time that the cream kind of rises to the top. The guys that you expect to step up are the guys that need to step up. And I think that's just the biggest key for TCU.
Yeah, and I thought the fact the way that they went about winning that series, getting blown out on Friday and then bouncing back and finding a way, and like you said, on Sunday, starter doesn't go very deep in the game, but still finding a way to win was pretty impressive there. And you know, we'll see if they can carry this on into the final stretches. They got an intriguing non-conference matchup this weekend against Florida State, so that should be a really fun one to watch. But the team they played, Oklahoma State, now, Oklahoma State didn't sweep some of the teams at the bottom of the standings. They took two or three the last three or four series leading up to this TCU series. Now they lose the TCU series. Now TCU barely slides above them in the standings. You know, when you look at the Cowboys, their next two series, the Big 12 series at least, are against Texas and Texas Tech. What do they have to do to bounce back after dropping that TCU series to play more consistently and, you know, play up to their potential against the high caliber teams?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing when I look at Oklahoma State is if you look at the weekend, really, I mean, you know, they had a hard-fought series and they had a hard-fought series finale, a game that frankly could have kind of gone either way. But I think the biggest thing when you look at this team overall is if you look at the weekend, you know, Victor Medeiros really struggled. I mean, this is a guy with a big-time arm, and if you look at what he did against TCU over the weekend, he just wasn't very good. So I think if you're Oklahoma State and you look down the stretch and you're kind of looking at the situation going, hey, what do we need to do to get to Omaha? You know, I think Bryce Osmond, you know, yeah, he gave up four runs of six innings, but you know, that's an okay outing. Like, it's not great. It's not bad. That's an okay outing. Like, I think he's pitched really well as of late. Justin Campbell is going to be Justin Campbell, but you know, especially in a regional, you've got to have a guy like Medeiros there in the middle. He's going to have to be consistent. And so I think the biggest thing for them is just consistency, specifically in the week of rotation. I feel pretty good, again, about Osmond and Campbell. But, you know, eyes are on kind of Medeiros going to the weekend against Texas.
Oklahoma State in the top five, a team that has been performing well all season before this weekend against TCU. Texas hasn't quite lived up to that preseason number one billing that we had them at. What hasn't exactly clicked, and do you think it still could for the Longhorns?
Yeah, I mean, Texas is a team that I'm interested to see how they kind of continue after the Baylor series, because I think when you look at, you know, when you look at Texas overall, they played well against TCU. Well, they played okay against TCU. I actually didn't think they played great against TCU, but you know, when you look at the job they did, you know, this past weekend, 46 runs in three games. I get that Baylor's banged up. You know, Tyler Thomas is out for the year with an injury. It's a different Baylor team than what we expect to come in the year. But anytime you can score 46 runs in three games, you know, Ivan Melendez has a, you know, huge weekend for the Horns. That's the biggest thing for me when I look at Texas. You look at the middle of that line of Murphy Staley, you know, Ivan Melendez, you know, they'll get Eric Kennedy back and healthy at some point. I still really like that lineup. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Pete Hansen's one of the best starting pitchers in college baseball. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, like, I'm not betting against Tristan Stevens on the stretch. Like, I get it. He hasn't been great the last few weeks, but he's still a veteran. He's still a guy that has experience, you know, throwing darts and commanding the zone really well in the postseason. And so I still think, you know, Texas still isn't quite there just yet. I want to see what they do against Oklahoma State on the heels of that Baylor series. But the Baylor series was certainly an improvement over what they did against Air Force in the midweek, which was not very pretty.
That Air Force is an intriguing team. I try to get you guys to let me go out and see Paul Skeens in person. Didn't work out, but they're a fun team to watch for sure. They can definitely hit the ball over the park. Another team that's known for their hitting, Texas Tech. You know, their RPI is sitting at 41 overall. Can the Red Raiders make up enough ground to get back in that top 16 and bring a regional back to Lubbock?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, I think when you look at Texas Tech overall, you know, that's one of those teams that, again, I'm never betting as Tim Tadlock, you know, but I look at Texas Tech, and really outside of Andrew Morris and Brandon Burtzel, like, where is my faith in that pitching staff right now? I'm just not sure where it's at. I think, you know, we talk about guys needing to step up down the stretch. Texas Tech is like a prime example of a team that needs some guys to step up. I think, you know, playing Baylor this weekend probably helps them right that ship. But, I mean, they still have to go to Oklahoma State, and they still have Oklahoma. So they have three conference series left. They're sitting at 9-6. They're still within striking distance. They're just a game out of first place in the league. But with the RPI sitting at 43, and, you know, you look at the remaining RPIs, you get, you know, Baylor 56. You got Oklahoma State 28. You got Oklahoma 34. There's wiggle room there to get in that kind of 20 range. I don't think they can get in the teens, but I think they can get in those mid-20s if they finish strong enough. And, of course, there is a conference tournament. Texas Tech is one of those prime example teams that could get on a run in the conference tournament and host a regional because of that. So Texas Tech, a little wobbly, but, you know, their preseason kind of goal is still within reach to some extent.
They've got to pitch a little bit better on Sundays. Like you mentioned, outside those top two arms, they've really struggled. They've given up at least six runs, I think, on almost every Sunday, especially in Big 12 play. They've really struggled in that part. You know, on the other side, there's two teams that are just outside of that top four, a half game back of Texas Tech and Texas, I believe. But looking like they're on the outside, looking in as far as, you know, making a regional. So looking at Oklahoma, they've won five in a row, while West Virginia has lost its last two series after starting pretty strong in Big 12 play. What do they have to do to work their way up into at-large contention?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. I mean, I actually feel pretty good about Oklahoma and West Virginia right now. I mean, the thing about the Big 12 is, you know, the Big 12 is the third-rated RPI conference in the country right now. And the third-rated RPI conference in the country with two teams in the mid-30s, they're getting in. I mean, history would suggest they're getting in. And so that's not to say you can let your guard down, because it's anything but that, because all of a sudden if you dip in the 40s, it's a totally different ballgame. You know, was it Oklahoma, I want to say, a few years ago, was in like the mid-50s or early, like low 50s, and did not make the tournament. So they don't, you know, this isn't a time to get passive. But, you know, sitting at 7-5, RPIs in the mid-30s, I still feel okay about those teams. Now, both of them need to finish, you know, strong, relatively strong, and play well in Oklahoma City. But for now, they should be okay.
Is this a case of if they stay above 500 in conference play, they should be okay?
Probably, because if they stay above 500 in conference, especially because the thing is, when you look at like Oklahoma, for instance, they still have four RPI DBU, three games against 26 RPI TCU, 33 games against 33 RPI West Virginia, 43 RPI Texas Tech. So, like, that RPI is not really going to move a ton unless they just totally tank. And so, and that kind of starts this weekend with Kansas State at home, who has an 86 RPI. If you're Oklahoma, you want to try to sweep that. If you can sweep that series, that gives you a lot of wiggle room down the stretch, because then you're sitting at 10-5 in conference. Your RPI is probably in the upper 20s, and you're pretty much kind of a lock at that point.
They got to take care of business this weekend and then see what they can do against the teams up at the upper echelon of the conference right now. Yeah, a team that we thought would contend and, you know, be in the mix with that group above them, Baylor, just hasn't come together this season. They're 20-20. They fell to 20-20 over the weekend. They lost their ace, Tyler Thomas, over the weekend. They're 4-11 in conference. But Baylor's not the only one that's been going through this, you know, with the struggles of losing key arms. You wrote about this, you know, last week. You know, what's kind of been the thing that has, you know, what's been the most common theme when you look at some of the big time arms that have gone down this season?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, it's interesting. I've talked to some pitching coaches who are kind of the idea of like, hey, it's our job to kind of figure this out. But, you know, I was talking to a couple of college arms, you know, kind of via DM and, you know, off the record. And, you know, one of the things they mentioned is just they just think that, like, hey, with the COVID year, with just the general emphasis on spin and things like that, and they're not blaming coaches. They're blaming themselves as much as anybody. But they just said with the obsession with kind of spin and the velocity combo, that's just a lot of stress on somebody's arm. I mean, you play baseball, go watch a video of a guy trying to throw a big, you know, bending breaking ball. It's a lot of stress on the arm. And so I just think that's what it boils down to. It's kind of the perfect storm between that and the COVID stuff.
It's been interesting. There's been a number of top tier guys that have gone down. Who's kind of stepped up though? You know, looking around the country, who's a couple guys that maybe were, you know, a little bit down the rankings, but because of the injuries that have happened this year, might see their name get called a little bit earlier in the draft than expected?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think you look at like Thomas Harrington at Campbell, you know, he's a big time arm who, you know, obviously mid 90s guy. He's a big time arm who I think could rise up the boards you know, with a strong finish. You know, Gabe Hughes, guy you're very familiar with at Gonzaga. I think he's a kid that, you know, because of the year he's had, he could rise up even more because of these injuries. You know, Bryce Hubbard at Florida State's another one of those guys. You know, Blade Tidwell, he's back and healthy for Tennessee, and he's thrown really well. He's up to 98 last week. You know, we kind of had him more of a second rounder. He could get in the first round. And then you look at guys like Jacob Waters at West Virginia, speaking of the Big 12. You know, he had a rough start against Texas Tech over the weekend, but, you know, he's got a big arm. Big, you know, 96, 98 mile an hour fastball. And the secondary stuff, though, wasn't great against Texas Tech. For the most part, is still really good. And so the last guy for me, and the guy I'm just fascinated with, again, kind of going back to your neck of the woods, Cooper Jerpy. At some point, the results to go with the stuff have to matter. And I think even though Jerpy is projected as a mid-second rounder, it would not shock me to see him get in the first round when you consider, you know, he does have some velocity. He has excellent command of the strike zone, and he's a guy that you know, I think it's 100 strikeouts and 13 walks right now for Oregon State. That's just incredible.
Yeah, he's been fantastic from the left side, really taking his game to that next level, and that's been the difference there. Guy coming in the preseason, you said, yeah, he's probably a draft prospect, but the results he's had have definitely pushed him up the boards, I think. And talking with some scouts, they go, is that just a reliever, or is that Chris Sale at his, you know, at the big league level? You know, is it a guy, and can he sustain, or is it Chris Sale where you get a couple good years and then it's, you know, injury because of that lower arm slot from the left side? A lot of people are mentioning that one. So that's an interesting guy to keep an eye on. You mentioned Harrington from Campbell, you know, talking with Rob Vaughn. We had him on, you know, a couple weeks ago on the D1 Sidearm Delivery Podcast. And he mentioned to me earlier in the season, now this is before they got all the way into their Big 10 conference schedule, but he said that was the best arm they faced all season. So that was about halfway through the year. So that's a big compliment there as well, because Maryland's played a pretty good schedule. So some intriguing arms from, you know, from some different parts of the country. But the Big 12 definitely has some arms at the front of the rotations as well. And, you know, it's going to be interesting though, every time when you get to that conference tournament, it comes down to, okay, what can that ace do on one game, but who's got the deepest rotation, the deepest arms, and who can just out hit everybody else? You know, that happens a lot of times as well. So who do you think is best positioned to go on a run in the Big 12 tournament, help bolster their resume to at least get in, you know, if they can win the tournament? That automatically gets you in, obviously, but maybe leads you to be a regional host. Maybe it leads you to be a top 8 seed. You know, who can help boost that resume up with a strong week?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing for me down the stretch is I'm kind of looking at TCU and potentially becoming a top 8. You know, I think if you look at the Frogs overall, I still like their offense a lot. I think with Crow back, you know, we talked earlier about the, you know, having the 4 legit frontline starting options. They've got pieces in the bullpen. I've got my eye on TCU going from a potential top 16 to a team that by the end of the conference tournament could find itself in the top 8, because I think they might have the most pitching depth in this league right now. You know, Oklahoma is really interesting to me. They've done a nice job offensively. Reggie Willis has kind of his fingerprints on that offense. And I think when you look at Oklahoma overall, I mean, they're right there with TCU, maybe even better in terms of just high quality pitching depth. Circle Oklahoma. They're one of those teams that at the end of the year, you can see them end up in Omaha and people are going, hey, where did these guys come from? But whereas, you know, they've had that potential all season long, and maybe they're finally starting to play to that potential.
Well, we'll see what happens in the conference tournament. We'll see what happens in these 3 weeks or so before that happens. KR, thanks so much for taking the time to jump on and join us for a little bit. And, you know, now you can get back to, you know, the full-on hating of everybody's teams.
You got it, brother. Good talking to you.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Sidearm Delivery Podcast. That was D1 Baseball national writer Kendall Rogers. Thanks again to KR for jumping on to talk about the Big 12 and TCU. Thanks as well to TCU first-year head coach Kirk Sarlos for taking some time to join us. And thanks also to you guys for listening. Please like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, all those fun things, and let me know on Twitter your favorite part and who you want to see us have on the show next. Hope you enjoyed the podcast and hope you'll be back for the next episode of D1 Baseball Sidearm Delivery Podcast, hosted by yours truly, Shotgun Spratling.
Ding, ding.